Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. It's Thursday, January 8th. Thank you for downloading today's podcast. Now, we've got plenty to get through today, including a look at the weather warning issued for Kent ahead of Storm Goretti. There are celebrations to mark the 30th anniversary of Ashford International, and we've spoken to a dad who's taking on a running challenge to help pay for his disabled daughter's physiotherapy. All of that is still to come. But first, let's take a look at our top story today. And this is one of the most read stories on our website. A caravan in Sittingbourne has been torched in a suspected arson attack in the early hours of Monday morning, an arm's length from where a young family was sleeping. Now, Joe Crossley's been covering this story for Kent Online. He's joined me now on the podcast so we can unpack some of the details. First of all, Joe, can you give me the general circumstances around the blaze? When and where has this happened?
Sure. So the first people knew about the camper van fire in just outside Litmus House in Sittingbourne was a car alarm going off. Neighbours told me how they opened up the curtains and saw a large fire and had to evacuate. But the actual circumstances about what happened, we've been able to sort of piece together using CCTV footage from Litmus House and also Ring doorbell footage from other properties in the area. So the first that we can kind of see of the incident is a person who is hooded and appears to be carrying a jerry can walking towards Litmus House from Bristol Close, which is nearby. We then see him on the same Ring doorbell footage around 4 minutes later carrying a jerry can away from the scene, without the jerry can in his hands, running away from the scene. We then can see from CCTV footage firefighters battling the flames. So that's what we know at the moment.
Now, in your story at Kent Online, you mentioned a young family was sleeping nearby and they got ready to evacuate their flat with their baby. Is that right?
Sure, yeah. So the first that they heard about was a car alarm going off, as well as one of their neighbours banging on their door. Basically, they opened the curtains, saw the flames and took their baby out, took some shoes and some clothes for them, packed up because they thought they could be, you know, in the midst of this massive fire, it could catch fire to the flats because it was literally a arm stretch away from the flats, the fire. So they were really scared about it all, as you can imagine.
As you say, CCTV and doorbell footage managed to capture some of what happened. What else does it show?
Yeah, so from the footage from Litmus House, you can see the fire really take hold. We can't see the actual arson attack, which we believe has happened, but we see firefighters trying to extinguish the flames, and then it's kind of blocked by a large amount of smoke coming from the fire. But you can see from that footage just how close the camper van is to the flats, and that's something that neighbours are really concerned about.
And I believe you've spoken to the owner of the van.
Yeah, so I spoke to the owner of the van on condition of anonymity. He didn't want to be named, pictured, he didn't want to be sort of go on the record, but he did tell me about his feelings about it all and how concerned he was that someone had what he feels deliberately targeted his van. He said he didn't know why someone would do something like that, but he thought that it could be mistaken identity or something like that along those lines. In terms of how he feels about his camper van, he said that the main thing was that his son loved it. He spent the summer kind of touring the country with his son, who's five, and he said that that had really bonded them and they had really good memories, and that camper van reminded him of that time he spent with his son. So he said, you know, it was absolutely vile what the person did, but he was more concerned, or said to me that he was more concerned about that the person had done such a thing when the flats were so near, and how worse it could have been if the fire had taken hold with the flats, or if the car had exploded.
And just finally, Joe, have you heard from police about their investigation?
Yeah, so the police said that they're investigating the incident. A note that was popped into people's doors by a police officer said that they're looking into an arson attack and are hunting the culprit. the official lines sort of say that they're investigating and that they're appealing for information.
Thanks, Joe. You can read more about this story and see the footage for yourself by clicking on the story at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
A Rochester man has pleaded guilty to attempted murder after stabbing a soldier near an army barracks. Anthony Eason was arrested following an attack on Lieutenant Colonel Mark Teton at Brompton Barracks in Gillingham in July 2024. The soldier spent 4 weeks in hospital before being discharged. Eason, who's 25 and from Mooring Road, was due to stand trial next month after delays to legal proceedings following issues around his mental health. He's now admitted attempted murder and will be sentenced next month. A Turkish national has been sentenced to 11 years in prison in Belgium for supplying thousands of boats to people smugglers. Investigators believe 45-year-old Adam Savas provided equipment used in half of all channel crossings in 2023. He's also been fined more than £340,000. 32 people have crossed the channel to Kent in this week's freezing conditions. Elsewhere, a teenager from Afghanistan has become the first person to be charged with a new offence linked to small boat crossings on the day it came into force. The 18-year-old is accused of endangering the lives of others during a crossing to Kent on Monday and has appeared at Margate Magistrates Court. The maximum sentence for the offence is 5 years in prison. A teenager has been arrested after an alleged assault in Gravesend left a man with head injuries. The victim was reportedly attacked by a group in the High Street on December 15th. It's believed they also tried to steal his e-bike. A 14-year-old has been released on bail. Police are still working to identify the other suspects. A man's been returned to prison after being caught stealing hundreds of pounds of goods from the Ashford designer outlet. Repeat offender Jesse Barton was subject to a criminal behaviour order banning him from entering retail stores across the town. The 37-year-old, who has no fixed address, targeted the Puma and Tommy Hilfiger stores earlier this month. He's been locked up for 3 months. Police investigating reports of an indecent exposure in Deal have released a picture of a man they want to question. It's alleged to have happened on Beach Street in the town on November 25th. We've shared the image at Kent Online. Investigations are underway after a dog was thrown off Canterbury's historic city wall. Black Labrador Cross Hugo suffered shattered bones and has had to undergo specialist surgery. It's believed he'd been listed for free online shortly before the incident on December 15th. He's now recovering with a foster family.
Kent Online News.
A woman's been injured in a crash involving three vehicles in Ashford. Witnesses say Sir Henry Brackenbury Road was left ungritted before the collision earlier this morning. A dog walker is also said to have been hurt after falling over nearby. Residents in Bidborough are still facing disruption to their water supplies today. System levels have been low since Tuesday following a number of burst mains. We're told similar issues in Tunbridge Wells have now been resolved. South East Water have apologised to customers. Now, a weather warning for strong wind has been issued for part of Kent as Storm Goretti is due to hit the UK. Coastal areas around Dover and Folkestone will be impacted from 3 this afternoon until 8 tomorrow morning. An amber cold health alert is still in force until Sunday. Annie Shuttleworth is from the Met Office. She's urging us to take extra care on the roads.
In Kent along the south coast, you will likely see some strong winds as a result of Storm Goretti, predominantly overnight Thursday into Friday. We are expecting some very heavy rain as well. If you're in an area where there's a warning issued, make sure you take the advice of local authorities. It's in those warning areas where you're more likely to see any disruption to travel, and you do need to take extra precautions if you're driving as well. And also when it's we have prolonged cold weather, it's important to check on those who are more vulnerable. So any vulnerable family or neighbours that you have, make sure you check in with them, because people can be more reluctant to go outside. We are expecting the weather to become a little bit milder. There's not a huge widespread risk of snow in the next few days across Kent. But as I said, that cold weather will last well into next week. It's not going anywhere. So if you haven't got your winter bits and bobs out, your winter woolies, if you're not quite prepared yet, it's still worth getting all those things out because the cold weather is set to last into next week.
Now, this all comes as firefighters in Kent have warned of the dangers of frozen lakes and ponds after children were seen venturing onto the ice. Images taken in Headcorn and Folkestone show youngsters standing on the frozen water. I've been speaking to Kent Fire and Rescue Service Group Manager James Kirk.
Colder weather, it's something for us here at KFRS that we're always mindful of the risks, and we really want to highlight that safety first. So as you say, one of the key things there is around frozen ponds. They can look solid, but they can give way without warning. So our advice really is just, you know, it looks solid, but stay away from it because it may not be. So people should just stay well away, and obviously making sure that children keep off the frozen water all the time.
As you say, you know, sometimes, yeah, they do look really solid, and then they can give way. And I'm assuming what's underneath is, you know, freezing water. Is there a potential that, you know, people could cut themselves on shards of ice? What are some of the dangers that have come with that?
As you quite rightly said, yeah, water freezing cold. It's just more dangerous than what people see it as. So if anyone sees anyone struggling at all, just please, what we ask is that you call 999 immediately, and we will respond.
One of the things that we have had a couple of reports of in Kent is school children in particular venturing out onto ponds and lakes that have frozen over. Is this something that parents should be talking to their children about, just to sort of warning them of the dangers and letting them know that it's not as fun as it seems?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, we really do ask parents that just to make sure that we are having those conversations. And it goes back to my original point that, and as you quite really said, it looks solid, but it might not be. And it's like, as soon as they give way, there is frozen water and it's highly dangerous. So we ask parents just to make sure that any conversations with children is to make sure that they keep off the frozen water all the time.
Temperatures are expected to stay in single figures for the next week with some sleet.
Kent Online News.
It hasn't welcomed international rail passengers since the start of COVID, but an event's been held today to mark the 30th anniversary of Ashford International Station. The site opened on this day in 1996, the year the first flip mobile phone was released. It cost £80 million to build the facility, and a campaign is continuing to bring it back into use. Dick on Spain is from Bring Back Eurotrains.
We've got over 100 people at the event, all sorts of movers and shakers from the rail industry. And we've got a number of people from Eurostar rivals that are interested in services. So they're all at the event, and they can experience what an unparalleled place that Ashford International really is. It's second only to St Pancras International in terms of the customer experience. And in some ways, actually, I think people may have had better experiences at Ashford International because you're not having to sort of wade through domestic passengers to get to your trains on the international side of the station. And it's a purpose-built facility there. So they will get to experience that again. I'm sure, you know, they will, it'll prompt them to really to think about the viability of it. Certainly from the financial point of view, it's an excellent sort of prospect. If you get a decent number of services from the station, a provider could be earning a lot of money. But it is a matter of getting the station reopened. So there is activity on that side rather interestingly as well now.
And how much would it take to actually get that station open again? Because as we say, it's been mothballed for quite a while now. You've got the majority of the infrastructure there already, but what needs to be done to get it operational again?
Well, it has been maintained in a very, very high state of readiness, actually, or repair. What they've called soft mothballing is their official phrase. This is HS1 or London High Speed St Pancras, as they're now called, that look after the station. So, you know, you could go up to any button, press a lift button, it'll work, light switches, everything is main, and it looks like people have just stepped out. So on that basis, that's really good. But as you say, there is a job to do, and that would involve putting in the customs facilities, the X-ray scanners and all of that kind of thing, and refreshing the station. We're probably talking about £4 million all told, which to you and me sounds like a lot of money. But on the scale of things, you know, you're talking about perhaps a putting in a roundabout on a road or a small bit of road. It's sort of pocket change in terms of the overall value that would bring, and we've seen evidence that would bring in relaunching the station would actually bring in about £500 million in extra income into the country a year. So it easily pays for itself from the government point of view. If we can get the station going for £4 million, then it makes it very easy for Eurostar rivals competitors to commit to serve the station. So How that happens is another matter, but certainly government has formed a task group to do that, to look into reopening the station. So that's a fantastic bit of news, which does give us some optimism that we're going to get services back.
Last year, Virgin Trains were given permission to use a depot in East London, paving the way for them to run international trains through the county. Work is finally going to start on a new tunnel for buses near Bluewater. The 75-metre long underpass will go between the Whitecliff housing development and the shopping centre, also giving access to nearby Ebbsfleet International Railway Station. It was given planning permission back in 2020, but was delayed due to funding issues. The project is expected to cost £18 million. A new state-of-the-art facility is planned for the William Harvey Hospital in Ashford to help increase capacity for stroke patients. Bosses say the 54-bed unit will be used to treat both appointments and emergency patients and provide jobs for 200 NHS staff. Proposals have been submitted to council with a decision expected by March 18th. Amusement operators in Margate have been granted a licence to open a new adult gaming centre. The site on North Down Road in Cliftonville, owned by Kane's Amusements, will have slot machines and other computerised gaming terminals. There'll be no other forms of gambling and they won't be able to serve alcohol.
Kent Online News.
A mum from Sittingbourne who became a widow at the age of just 39 has published a book she hopes will bring comfort to others. Emma Charlesworth from Bap Child lost her partner Stuart during the pandemic in 2020, leaving her to raise their 10-year-old daughter, Rebecca, alone. She says her memoir, Is Daddy Going to Be Okay?, is an honest account of the struggles that followed, and she's told us what inspired her to write it.
So I've always gone on this mission that Charlie's never going to be a statistic of the pandemic, because I just felt the media, and I understood why the media focused on numbers, but for me, I was always like, but every number is a person with a family and friends. So I've always said he won't be a statistic of the pandemic. So that was kind of my main driver, was to tell our story and to kind of ensure his legacy lives on. And it also creates a legacy for Rebecca as well. And what's really funny is I didn't ever sit down and say, I'm going to write a book for this audience. So I didn't sit there and go, I'm going to write a book for people who have been bereaved, or I'm going to write a book for this. I just sat down and thought, you know what, I'm going to tell our story and create that legacy for Charlie, rather than going, I'm going to write it for. So it was more around with that mission to him, for him not to be a statistic and to create a legacy for them both.
They're a menace to drivers in Kent, and now the RAC has come up with a tongue-in-cheek guide to potholes. The organisation's given them names, including the Alcatraz, because you can't escape it, and the Moonscape, where the road looks like the lunar surface. The boss of Kent County Council recently helped celebrate the 23,000th pothole to be filled in the county. Bosses of a pub in Dover say they'll close their doors this weekend after the last of their stock is sold. The Priory Hotel, opposite Dover Priory Railway Station, has been open since the late 1800s. The landlords say they're closing for the time being, but there's no suggestion when it could reopen. A dog walker's trying to track down the owner of a group of turkeys that were found wandering around Kent woodland. Rob Kerner says he was confronted by 14 of the birds on North Downs Way near Chollock. You can see pictures at Kent Online. And a dad from Maidstone is aiming to complete a running challenge in 2026 to help pay for his disabled daughter's physiotherapy. Christina was born with a brain condition which impacts her mobility and hearing. She'll turn 3 in January and is still unable to stand up or speak. Camille Shadkovsky says they're spending hundreds of pounds a month on therapy sessions. He's been chatting to Lucy.
There has been progress, definitely. However, bearing in mind her condition, it's going to be probably a minimum of another sort of 15, 20 years of hard work to get her sort of, you know, to the level where hopefully she still can live an independent life, or fairly independent life, if this will ever get to this stage. Christina is a little bit more active. The hands are moving slightly better. She can now be nearly free. She can now turn from side to side, which was a big thing for her. And she absolutely loves that. She's trying to show off as much as she can when she's got an opportunity to sort of lie down flat and move from side to side. She's very, very hardworking, bright little soul. Always happy, always smiley. The hearing is getting better thanks to a fantastic team at St. Thomas in London. We've got quite a lot of development with hearing, so we're starting to hear a bit more. She's been a bit more vocal, You might hear her throughout the interview, but she's also going shy very often, so you might see her going shy a little bit. So things are going in the right direction, but obviously the next steps for us will be maybe try to think about her standing up. We would like to hear the first word. And well, hopefully with enough support, enough therapies, we might be able to see, you know, that first step one day. Not sure if it's going to be 1 year or 5 years or 10 years to wait for this, but it's all going in the right direction.
So talk to me a bit about the fundraising challenge you've set yourself for 2026.
So my previous challenge to celebrate Christina's second birthday was 500 kilometers in 2 months, which was lovely. It was very, very demanding. It was quite heartbreaking. 250 kilometers a month is actually a big distance, at least for me. I'm not a professional runner. In 2026, I would like to do 1,000 kilometers in 1 year. And this also corresponds a little bit with hard work that that Christina is doing, and the whole persistence that we all have to put into this, because it's not about sprinting. It's all about a marathon. It's all about those little things, little changes every day, the hard work that has to happen every single day. And as much as Christina is working very hard, I would like to join up with her.
And how much are you looking to raise through your fundraising? Because obviously Christina gets support through the NHS, but also this private physiotherapy is so important for her, isn't it? I mean, how much does it cost and how much do you need to raise?
So private therapies, there is no set amount. We doing whatever we can afford. We're using quite a few different therapists and companies, there's quite a lot of charities that we use as well. To be on the level where we would like to be, you're probably looking at about £600 to £800 a month. So the big goal would be 10,000 in a year. And that would really allow us to perhaps have something tailored for Christina, and have a few of these therapies where you go away for a week or two, and you sort of stay within a special, I wouldn't say hospital, but just a therapy place, have these sort of bundles of therapies where she's sort of working hard for a week or two and having a few hours a day. Hour of therapy is anything between £60 to £120. The more the better, and as I've mentioned, it's still I believe 16 or 18 hours per year from NHS. We try to do at least two hours a week, and this is something we can really afford because well, the costs are not small. We use a few fantastic therapies. There's a place called Step and Learn that is located in Gillingham, and these guys are just absolutely phenomenal. We also got a local therapist in Maidstone, Debbie, who's absolutely wonderful. She is a conductive education therapist, and I could not praise her enough. She's just doing so much for Christina.
Kent Online Sports.
Taking just a quick look at a couple of bits of sport today in football. Gillingham are on the lookout for a new youth team manager. Joe Dunn's been in the job since November 2024, but says he's decided to move on after getting an opportunity elsewhere. And in cricket, Australia have taken the final Ashes test by 5 wickets. It means they'll wrap up a comprehensive 4-1 series win. Kent's Zach Crawley was in the England squad. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups, and exclusive stories. You can choose the subscription plan that works best for you. To find out more, head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.